Hey, he's on.
Hello and welcome. We are bringing to you live Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah's speech, which is commemorating the end of that war that happened in the year 2006 with Israel. Let's take a listen to what he's saying.
Son of Abdullah, and may peace be upon all of his family, may peace be upon all of his friends, and may peace be upon all of the prophets. Assalamu alaikum, may peace be upon you all. At the beginning, I would like to speak to you, to speak to this huge gathering and this turnout, and I express my great thanks for your turnout. I express my great thanks for this gathering in the midst of such circumstances, especially coming to this village which is right on the borderline, side by side with the Zionist occupying entity, the entity which occupies the territory of beloved Palestine. I thank you for this turnout, and I salute you. I salute you and I give my salutes to you, not just one salute. And I must, of course, at the beginning, we must speak about what took place yesterday, and we pray for the mercy, for mercy of the soul on the souls of the martyrs, those who were killed by the terrorist bombing in southern Beirut in Dahiya, and we pray to God as well, and we wish that all those wounded, we hope that they will be cured and treated after this big, dangerous terrorist attack. And we also express our condolences, and we also express our sympathy to the families of the martyrs and the families of the wounded and all those who were wounded physically, psychologically, spiritually, from the material or financial perspective yesterday in this assault. And we must also express our high appreciation and bow down and express our respect when it comes to the patience of the people, the inhabitants of Dahiya, their patience and how they assume responsibility and their high level of vigilance and their behavior of discipline. We'd also like to express our thanks to all those who expressed solidarity and condemned and showed sympathy when it comes to this painful incident. The presidents, the ministers, religious leaders, political figures, MPs, parties, groups, figures, media outlets, countries, governments, and of course, we must also condemn the silence of those countries that were silent, and the days might uncover that such countries might have supported terrorism and killings and the murders which are taking place throughout this region. My dear brothers and sisters, I have two main issues in my speech. The first part of my speech is related to the anniversary of this war, the July 2006 war. You can call it what you want, the July 2006 war, the Honest Promise war, the Second Lebanese War, as the enemy called it. And the second part of my speech, I would like to address in the second part, I would like to speak about the internal situation. Of course, after the terrorist attack on our people in Dahiya and the previous attacks which had taken place, the rocket attacks and the bombings, especially in the second part of my speech, at the time where I speak to you directly, but at the same time via you, I will speak to all those who are listening now and all those who are following my speech in all different areas and all different countries. Allow me to speak clearly, and I will speak calmly as well, and allow me to speak responsibly and in a transparent way, and I will name everything very clearly. And we shall also draw our roadmap in order for us to cooperate so that we can prevent this terrorist destructive project of sedition from achieving success. This year, I'll begin with the first part, of course. This year, we wanted to commemorate the anniversary in this village of Ait al-Sha'b, which is right, as I said, on the borderline, right on the border, from which we can oversee or from which we can see with our own eyes occupied Palestine. The wind blowing here is the wind of Palestine, the breeze of Palestine, and from where you are, you now can smell the breeze of occupied Palestine. Of course, I chose this place because it's significant. You now, you, the men, women, the elderly, the young, you, the political figures, religious figures, military and security officials, you who have gathered here today, you are just a stone throw away from this enemy. This turnout, After 65 years of the establishment of the Israeli entity, has a lot of meanings and has high significance, which you know and which everybody watching knows. We wanted to gather today and commemorate this anniversary in Aita as a symbol. Aita is a symbol just like all of our other villages, all of our other suburbs and cities and towns in the south and in Bekaa and in southern Beirut, Daqia, and other Lebanese areas. Aita is a symbol for all of those people. And it's a symbol for all of these villages and areas. It's a symbol with its good-hearted people of perseverance who hold on to their territory, and it's a symbol by its heroic resistance fighters, the courageous fighters, and its martyrs who are alive with their God, and their wounded who are still showing perseverance, and also their prisoners who have been liberated. It is a symbol for all of the villages that fought for 33 days and showed perseverance and were not defeated. Aita is a symbol for this solidarity, for this solid stance. It's a symbol for this courage. It's a symbol of this determination. And it is also a theme of fighting as part of a vision, fighting law based upon a vision and sacrifice because of love. What happened in Aita over the course of 33 days, when it comes to its moral value, it was higher than the duty, higher than what was required, higher than the religious duty, higher than the national duty, higher than what they were assigned to do. It reflected the humanitarian level, the ethical value of this resistance, and for the people of this resistance and the territory of this resistance. And so for this reason, I say that what is behind this perseverance and this fighting was knowledge and love. And I don't forget back in those days of the July 2006 war, when most of the homes and houses in Aita were destroyed and when this village was subject to brutal destruction by the Israeli Air Force and the Israeli artillery, and when there were repeated attacks launched by the Israeli tanks. And also back then Aita was in great danger, and the fighters of Aita together with some of the inhabitants were in great danger, were in danger of being killed, all of them. And we told them, I sent them via my colleagues, my officials in Hezbollah, I told them, you don't have to stay in Aita. You are not obliged to stay in a village right on the border. Nobody will blame you. And this is not in contradiction with our strategy, which is not based on holding on to your geography. It's based on fighting guerrilla warfare, whereby we want to bring about the highest number number of losses for the enemy. However, they were the ones, those resistance fighters, those heroic, courageous resistance fighters, they are the ones who decided to stay in the border village right on the border. And they were the ones who decided to fight until the last bullet, until the last shell, until the last drop of blood, until the last breath, in order to send a message to the Lebanese and to the whole world regarding the identity, the moral identity of this resistance and of the people. Of the people of the resistance. And I, when I remember this stance, when I remember this stance, I also recall the companions of Imam Hussein, may peace be upon him, in Ashura, when he said that this night now has taken place. So take advantage of this night, this evening, and all of you, let them take their companions and families and leave, and allow me to fight the enemy. The same thing happened. Of course, the resistance didn't tell their fighters to go. We told them to go, of course, to take other fighting positions. However, they insisted on fighting on the front lines in Aita, as if with their blood and with their bodies and with the blood which was flowing through their veins in the every hour, at every hour of the 33 day war in Ait al-Sha'ab, their call day and night was Labbaik Ya Hussein. Labbaik Ya Hussein, of course, means we answer your call, Imam Hussein. Aita is the symbol of the village which, whereby all the inhabitants returned, just like all other people returned to the villages at the first hour of the ceasefire. They returned to their destroyed homes and houses, and they took refuge once again in their houses. They put up tents and they lived right in the midst and amongst the rubble and debris, and they insisted on staying in their territory, and they rebuilt their homes, and they also once again planted their farms, and they retrieved their dignified life, their life of dignity, which was given to them by the martyrs, their people, their sons. Aita today is the beautiful village of honor, a village which stands high, just like all of our other villages, all of our other beautiful villages. This is a symbol. My dear brothers and sisters, your victory, your historic victory on the 25th of May 2000, as we said just days ago and on more than one occasion, this victory ended the project of the Greater Israel, because Israel and its army, which cannot stay in Lebanon, which is the weakest Arab country, Lebanon, the weakest Arab country, when, of course, it cannot establish the Greater Israel from the Nile to the Euphrates River. And your historic victory on the 14th of August 2006 ended the project of the Greater Israel, of course, or the Great Israel, sorry, the first the Greater, the second the Great Israel, whereby Israel wanted to impose itself as a capable power, as a power of hegemony, which can impose its conditions on the Palestinians and the Lebanese and the Jordanians and the Egyptians and all the Arabs and all the peoples of the region and on Iran. And this project also aimed to make Israel a power which can terrorize, whereby when the Israeli army is mentioned, people shake from fear. But this was overthrown on the 14th of August 2006. You who have gathered in Aita today, you have proven that this project has fallen. This Israel, it left the July 2006 war, and according to what its officials and its generals and its people say, Israel ended this war or left this war defeated, weak, and it is still addressing the wounds which it suffered in that war until today via its drills, its maneuvers, its planning, etc., etc. However, the result of the, or the main conclusion of these two victories in 2000 and 2006, we have two main strategic results for Lebanon and for the governments and peoples of the region. The first result of the first victory in May 2000 is that the popular resistance, which is organized and which is armed and which has popular support from its people, this popular resistance is able of achieving liberation. This is not a theory. Or the main conclusion of these two victories in 2000 and 2006, we have two main strategic results for Lebanon and for the governments and peoples of the region. The first result of the first victory in May 2000 is that the popular resistance, which is organized and which is armed and which has popular support from its people, this popular resistance is able of achieving liberation. This is not a theory. It's not philosophy and theory. Evidence is what happened on May 25, 2000, and what also happened after that in Gaza, in the Gaza Strip. This is a strategic result on the level of thinking, on the level of choices, vision, and on the level of action, on the practical level. The second strategic result regarding the second victory in the July 2006 war, because some might say that popular resistance can liberate because it relies on guerrilla warfare and also exhausting the enemy and using time for its advantage and different tactics and preventing the enemy from putting up with such a situation for a long time, which forces the enemy to leave. However, some might say that popular resistance cannot be a defense force against a brutal military attack of multi-dimensions, of multi-levels. The July 2006 war and what took place in that war stated very clearly that the popular resistance, which is organized and which has support from its people, is capable of being a force of defense, a real force of defense, at a time whereby the country, which is being subject to an assault, doesn't have the military capabilities and the technology and the quality or quantity which the enemy has. Evidence of what I'm saying, or what proves what I'm saying, is what took place in July 2006. July 2006 provided a school. It was like a school. Today, it's being studied in different military academies throughout the world, although some people here rely on getting rid of this school or abandoning this school. We today, we once again underscore that we are committed to this school, we are committed to this path, the path of resistance, in order to liberate what remains of our occupied territories, and also in order to defend our people and to defend our families, to defend our villages and our nation Lebanon and the sovereignty of Lebanon and the territory and the water of Lebanon and its resources. And we also stress our belief, our complete belief, and our conviction, which was proven over the years, over 65 years. What is happening now is a result of the experience which we have went through, the experiences witnessed by the different governments and armies and political parties of the region and the resistance movements of the region. We hence have reached the conviction that what the most valuable thing which Lebanon possesses now, the best thing Lebanon possesses now, the best thing which we possess now is the golden equation, which says the army, the people, and the resistance. And this is something which we stress today as well. And we also say to the friend and to the enemy, we shall stay here on the border, villages. Of course, not to mention the deeper territories, the other areas. We shall stay here. We will plant our fields with our own hands and our farms. We will build our homes, not only on the border, but even right on the separation line. and allow me here, excuse me, UNIFIL, and excuse me, anyone else. We shall even build right on the separation line. We will build our houses there, and you have built your houses there. And we will preserve our water, even if it's lost in the land or in the sea. We won't allow the enemy to take this water. And we, our state, should extract its oil and its gas from our sea and on our maritime borders with occupied Palestine, and the Israelis won't be able to do anything with us. And today, let me also add, with the message which we sent, the ambush and the operation committed by Hezbollah against the Israeli soldiers just a few days ago, today, once again, I repeat what I said before. It is no longer allowed for any Israeli soldier, under any justification whatsoever, or under any excuse, under any facilitation, under anything whatsoever, it's no longer allowed for any Israeli soldier to take one step into our Lebanese territory, which is being drowned by the blood of our martyrs. These steps, these feet of Israeli soldiers, will be cut together with the necks. We shall not deal lightly or easily with any such acts with our territory and our people. And I tell the Israelis that the era of military, Israeli military tourism on the Lebanese border and inside Lebanese territories has ended. This era has ended. Without returning, the era will not return. And let me stress, my dear brothers and sisters, that your resistance today, and after 7 years since the victory of the July 2006 war, and despite everything that has taken place over these years, these difficult years, I would like to assure you, I'm not here speaking for the sake of speaking, not only just to boost your morale, I speak according to numbers and according to statistics and according to precise information. I say your resistance today is stronger than any time before, and it is more prepared than any time before, and it has more numbers than any time before, and it has a greater will and determination than any time before. Now I will begin with the second part of my speech. As I said in the second part of the speech, we should calm down. We shall speak calmly in order to take responsibility together. For these people to be targeted, for this environment to be targeted, for the children and women and men and elderly and the owners of shops and markets, for them to be targeted in Dahia, in southern Beirut or anywhere else, this is nothing new. With the enemy, any enemy, of course, what we have gone through with Israel, during our confrontations with Israel, anytime the Israelis failed in their confrontations with the resistance fighters, they resorted to striking the people, attacking the people, the supporters of the resistance, those who provided popular support environment for the resistance, even those who don't support their resistance, but were actually present or actually present in this country or in these areas. And the history of the Israeli wars and the Israeli massacres, the first Qana massacre, the second Qana massacre, what happened before that, what happened after that in Sahmur, in Nabatiyye, in Hula at the beginning, in many different villages, in Dahiyah, southern Beirut, in Shiyah, in Baalbak, in Nabishit, Ali Nahri, in different places in the July or during the July 2006 war. It's clear. Of course, the enemy behaves in such a way because he believes that this is our point of weakness. He believes that attacking our people is our point of weakness, and so pressures us in this perspective. When they fail in confronting us militarily, they resort to such behavior. Of course, this is a weak point, but it's something which also makes us proud. Because what does it show? It shows that the relationship between the resistance, between the leaders of resistance, the men of resistance, and the people is a relationship of sympathy, a humanitarian relationship, an ethical relationship, a spiritual relationship, as if they are one. So this resistance in Lebanon, never did it behave as if it came, for example, from the jungles of Africa or has been imported, for example, like some fighters elsewhere these days have been imported from other parts of the world. And so what happens for the people doesn't concern them. No, this doesn't work when it comes to Hezbollah. So throughout the years, for tens of years during the performance of resistance, the resistance was intent, and this is why the people supported it. The resistance wasn't taking military action and practicing resistance irrespective of the reaction and protecting the civilians until we saw the April understanding. To a high level, the April understanding was able to impose an equation of protecting the people, especially in South Lebanon, because we of course said that, you know, attacking South Lebanon would lead to attacks on the Israeli settlements. And so when there is a resistance and people who share the same sympathy towards the resistance, when they feel sad, when the resistance feels sad, when there are common pains, when people feel happy, when the resistance is happy, this is a point of strength on one hand, and on the other hand, it's a weak point which the enemy can take advantage of. Maybe there are some sides who are not concerned with the people. What's most important of all is the leader is okay and the family of the leader is okay, but they don't care about the people. Some sides might have such an approach, but what took place yesterday, my dear brothers and sisters, in Dahia in southern Beirut was an attack on the people. It was not an assassination operation. It was not, or there was no Hezbollah official who was targeted. There was no base or headquarter or Hezbollah institution in that area which was targeted. However, he who carried out this massacre in southern Beirut wanted to deliberately cause the highest number of casualties amongst men, women and children, civilians. This was the aim. What has been said so far in the media that the bomb is 50 or 60 kilograms of TNT, no, it's bigger than this. In due course, it's more than 100 kilograms actually, and in due course our colleagues will reveal these details at this area. The same goes for the previous bombing which took place in southern Beirut as well. This previous bombing, the first one, wanted to kill the highest number of people. The aim was to kill people and not to kill a leader or to target a specific institution or Hezbollah location. Anyway, this massacre comes within the context of this open, big conflict which has been open for tens of years. Before Hezbollah and after Hezbollah, as long as this conflict exists, this is one of the tools and details of this conflict. As long as there is a group or a camp which resists and refuses to give in to the international will and the Zionist will, and as long as we have people who support this camp, then this camp and its supporters, the people, it's natural for them to put up with the repercussions and the sacrifices. This is nothing new. Now we need to stop and shed light. There are some details to specify the responsibilities and, as I said, to draw a roadmap. Because today we don't want to stand on the sidelines. We aren't used to that. We, of course, carry on our shoulders at our shoulders, our martyrs. We bury them with pride, but with pain as well, especially those martyrs who fell yesterday. And we, of course, treat our wounded and build our homes. And we shall, of course, the state should be side by side with those who suffered. But we shall also be with them and help those who suffered from some damage or who suffered during this attack. This is what we are doing. But we must also go ahead and continue to confront what is upcoming. This is not the beginning of the world nor the end of the world. Neither is it the beginning of the conflict or the end of the conflict. It is part of this one phase on this long road. Over the past few months and few weeks in Bekaa, we saw rockets which were launched on Hirmil, and also rockets launched on some villages on Hirmil and Sir'in and Nabishit, on the outskirts of Nabishit, and also rockets which were launched on the city of Baalbek. It was well known who launched these rockets, because the rockets were launched from inside Syrian territories, and hence the so-called armed groups in Syria or Syrian opposition groups are the ones who launched the rockets. And here the perpetrator is well known. There's no need to look for evidence, because the perpetrator is well known. There's no need to make assumptions. Other things happened. We also saw bombings on the highway between Hirmil and other cities, which also led to civilian casualties and casualties amongst the Lebanese army. We saw a bombing on the Majdal Anjar road, also on the road of the city of Zahle. Rockets were launched on Dahi, southern Beirut as well. Until on the 9th of the 7th, we saw the bombing in Bir al-Abd in southern Beirut. Before that, we saw the rockets which were launched from inside some of the eastern Beirut areas to Mount Lebanon, and we saw also rockets which were launched towards Yarze in Babda. And the last was yesterday, the horrific massacre which was committed in Dahir in southern Beirut. Now let me speak about what took place before yesterday's bombing. Now, how did we behave? The bombs were targeting us on the Hirmil Highway, the Majdal Anjar Highway, and on the road of Zahle. The rockets which targeted Dahiyeh, southern Beirut, also targeted us. The other rockets which landed in Mount Lebanon, it's not clear if they were aiming for Dahiyeh, southern Beirut, or not. The big bombing which took place before the one yesterday, which led to the 50 people being wounded and which could have led to another horrific massacre, it's very clear as well that they were targeting our people, our environment. What did we do? I'm going to say what we did in order to build upon it. First of all, we didn't react hastily at all. You know, in Lebanon, whenever we have any incident anywhere, people go down and block roads. They block main roads, international roads, and they attack the cars, and they brake, and they ask for identity cards, and they beat people, etc. But we didn't react in that way. We didn't react in any way whatsoever. And here, I must salute the people, their vision, their vigilance. Second of all, we didn't accuse anyone. We didn't accuse anyone. And I, back then, I called on my colleagues in Hezbollah. I said there's no need to make statements or anything. Until now, I haven't spoken about what took place in Bir al-Abd, or about the bombings, or about the rockets which targeted Dahiyeh in southern Beirut. We behaved in an educational manner. Just as we called on others who were subject to attacks, others, for example, who were subject to assassination attempts or bombings or any incident, we always used to tell them, don't throw around accusations. Because what we saw before is that at the very beginning, they started to throw accusations, not just accusations, condemnations and judgments, and they wanted people to go to prisons. just like what is happening very repeatedly. Now, even with respect to the Bir al-Abad bombing, some words were said, the previous bombing, not the one yesterday, some people said, some officials or some figures in Beirut said that this car was planted by Hezbollah in order to take it as an excuse because Hezbollah wants to go ahead, create some facts in order to go ahead with some action. There is no more level, no higher level of injustice. I swear to God, you won't find anyone who loves these people and feels pain for the pain of these people and bows down to these people and kisses the turf or the sand under these people like Hezbollah and the leadership of Hezbollah. But we have some silly people who come and make statements and say on the internet or in interviews that the previous explosion in Dahir is the work of Hezbollah. And evidence is that nobody was killed. That's why they said Hezbollah was behind it. But I say you are the ones who work in such a way. The intelligence agencies whom you work with work in such a way. Hezbollah doesn't work in such a way. Now, we put some assumptions. Just as we make demands of others, we must behave in the same way. Who planted this car in Bir al-Abad in front of a marketplace? This is the previous explosion, not the first, not the one yesterday. Who planted the explosives on the Hirmil Highway? Who launched rockets? There are different assumptions. Of course, the security services, especially the Lebanese army intelligence, which pursued efforts which we thank them for, they were working on the same files. We are working on the same files, and after that, some common assumptions came together. We came and put down the assumptions. The first assumption was Israel. There is enmity between us and Israel. There's an open conflict between ourselves and Israel. So the first and logical assumption, especially from Hezbollah's perspective, according to Hezbollah's mindset, is to always put Israel as a culprit. Let's now search for Israel's agents, its spies. I'm not going to tell you how we look for its agents. What are the signals which make this a weak or strong assumption for this? We look for the signals, but it isn't clear. But however, the Israeli assumption remains. We can't deny it, but we don't have anything to confirm Israel was behind the first Dahiya explosion. The second assumption was the Takfiri groups, which said on more than one occasion, these groups said more than one occasion, not after Hezbollah entered Qusayr, even from the very beginning of the conflict in Syria. From the very beginning, these Takfiris declared their war and they said they're coming to us. They said they're going to fight us and make us pay the price. And you are, for us, for example, Persian, Iranian, etc., etc. This is the second assumption. So we said, let's look for this assumption as well. Everything we found, the evidence, and after we gathered everything together, and we also had a third assumption, that a third side maybe came in and it believes that there is a confrontation between it and Israel and that the Takfiris are threatening us and maybe some third party came in order to escalate the situation with the Israelis or maybe in order to create internal sectarian strife in the country. This is also an assumption, irrespective of who the third party is. It could be A, B, C, or D. We don't know. And we didn't quickly jump to conclusions and accuse until today. But today, I will accuse. Today, I want to accuse. Until yesterday, we hadn't accused anyone. After more than 30 days since the first Dahiya bombing and time has passed since the rocket launching and the bombs which were planted on the different highways. We gathered all of the evidence. And let me be fair that the Lebanese army intelligence arrested people not based upon the information which we provided, based upon their own information. The Lebanese army intelligence arrested people and interrogated them. And they also confessed and their confessions were in agreement with the information we had or which we gathered. And so I'd like to tell you very clearly today, let's begin step by step. I'd like to say that he who planted the bombs on the Hedemil Highway, they are well known by the names. One of them is arrested in custody, and some of what I will mention today was stated by the Lebanese Minister of Defense, and I believe, and I would like to thank the Minister of Defense for the statement which he issued and for his clarification, which reflects courage and reflects national, a high level of rational responsibility, and also reflects boldness. So I believe people listened to the statement. If they haven't, let them go and read the statement. One of the individuals of the group which planted the two bombs on the highway of Hermel was arrested by the Lebanese Army Intelligence, and he also uncovered the names of the rest of the group, name by name, and he also confessed, this is mentioned in the Lebanese Minister of Defense statement, he also uncovered the names of the people who killed the four youth in that area, meaning the two martyrs from Al-Jafar and the martyr from Amha's family and the Turkish martyr who was also martyred. Of course, we are the same people. These four people who were martyred, their killer is well known. And between brackets, I'll go back to this because I have a few words to say to the Jafar family and the Anbab's family. Of course, I'm speaking in Aita, but I believe in Baalbek they're listening to this speech. Now, he who planted the bomb in Majd al-Anjar is known by name as well. Those who launched the rockets in Tadahia in southern Beirut are also known by the names. And those who planted the bomb in Bir al-Abd in Dahi, southern Beirut, on the 9th of the 7th, is also known by the name. 99.99%, his name is known. I'm just going to leave 0.01% of doubt. Who are these people? Who are they? Are they? Now, according to the interrogations, they are not spies for Israel, no. Will this be proven later? Maybe. But until now, the interrogation hasn't proven that they are spies or agents for Israel. I haven't ruled that assumption out. Israel employs everyone. However, the information which has been gathered until now is that they belong to specific takfiri groups. They belong to specific takfiri groups. And they are known by name. And it is known who, you know, controls these groups. This is something well known. The statement of the Minister of Defense mentioned some names, and some other names weren't mentioned. Some of them were arrested and others were not arrested. And when it comes to their citizenship or nationality, some of them are Lebanese, unfortunately. And some of them are Syrian, unfortunately. And some of them are Palestinian, unfortunately. Now, the bombing which took place yesterday, everything, all of the information, everything points to the same group. And all of this information, all the evidence was in the possession of the Lebanese intelligence, which also informed us. Lebanese security services informed us of the information it has regarding specific locations and names, preparing cars in order to send them to southern Beirut. Cars packed with explosives, of course, and all the measures which we took in Dahi, where we disturbed the lives of the people. We went down to the streets and put up checkpoints, and people started to speak to us about our security, because our information and the information of the Lebanese official security services show that there are some who are preparing and will send car bombs to southern Beirut in Dahi. Of course, they did what they did, and we did what we did, and what took place yesterday took place. I don't want to say that the explosion of yesterday is the work of the Takfiri groups. However, what I will say is that the higher probability is that the Takfiri groups are behind it, according to the information which we have, in order not to hide behind our finger. These Takfiri groups, do they work for Israel? Of course they do. In order for no one to say that, someone, person X is saying Israel is not involved. No, Israel sometimes uses specific individuals, sometimes it uses groups. And we have no doubt that the American and Israeli intelligence has infiltrated, and some regional intelligence has infiltrated into these Takfiri groups. And we have no doubt they are using these groups. However, the groups which actually carried out, the side which carried out the explosion, are the Takfiris. This is regarding the accusation. Now, what should we do? Even the assumption of a suicide bomber is still an assumption which is up for debate. We want to see technically those who are working on the ground, what are the results they want to reach, because this was discussed on the media, and we cannot deny until now the assumption of the suicide bomber, a car bomb which has more than 100 kilograms of TNT. This is what is said, this is very clear. However, is it a suicide bomber or not? This should be uncovered during the investigation. What is required now? Is required now. And here, let us speak in a responsible way. There is a national goal which we must all put in our sights, and this was discussed during the meeting of the Higher Defense Council at the Presidential Palace in Baabda. There is a national goal. How do we prevent such terrorist assaults and such massacres from being repeated? Because today, or yesterday, even in Dahi, in southern Beirut, on the 9th of July, on the previous bombing, but tomorrow, where will the attack take place? There's no problem. If it's the Israelis have no problem. If it's Dahi, southern Beirut, or if it's anywhere else, the people of Dahi, southern Beirut, or the people living anywhere else. And if it's the Takfiris who are behind it, also Takfiris don't differentiate, because I'm going to go back to this point with the names. Those Takfiris, they kill Sunnis just like they kill Shia, and they kill the Muslims just like they kill the Christians, and they blow up mosques just like they blow up churches, and they send suicide bombers inside Sunni mosques just as they send them into Shia mosques. This is Iraq. You can see what's happening in Iraq. You can see what's happening in Syria, also in Pakistan, in Afghanistan, Somalia. There are many witnesses. So, if anybody assumes that the Takfiri groups are the ones who planted the bomb in southern Beirut and Dahi, so they won't plant them except in Shia neighborhoods, anyone who assumes such is mistaken. Anyone who assumes such a scenario. So there is a national goal. The national goal says, how can we as Lebanese together work in order to prevent such massacres and assaults, terrorist assaults, which targeted today southern Beirut and Dahi, but could target any other place in Lebanon in the future. This is not a security incident. It is not an assassination. And here, the degree of responsibility must rise, because I want to be very clear and frank. The first bombing, we controlled the situation. However, after the massacre yesterday, we controlled the situation, but we don't know. I'd like to tell all the Lebanese officials, to all Lebanese politicians, to the Lebanese army leadership and the security services, to all the Lebanese, to all the religious figures in Lebanon, if these bombings continue, whether we like it or not, whether we love it or we hate it, Lebanon will be right on the cliff, on the verge of collapse. We must act on such a level of responsibility, understanding the threat which Lebanon is confronting. And anybody who believes that this threat is only concerning or targeting one specific group or one religious sect is mistaken. those who are destroying the whole region now, they have taken a decision to destroy Lebanon. And this is the beginning. And so, from this stance, we must take a look at the new events which are unfolding. In order to achieve this goal, what should be done? First of all, there must be cooperation. It's the responsibility of the state on the first level and the state's institutions, the security institutions, military institutions, and also people in different areas must cooperate with one another. The political factions in different areas must cooperate also with the state's institutions. We must work on two levels. What I'm saying is nothing which I am in. This is something which people rely on throughout the world. The first is to take precautionary measures, inspections, checkpoints, looking for certain things we can do here or there. It's well known, the preemptive precautionary measures which could take. These are standard measures which exist all over the world. So there's not a lot of disagreements among different schools in that perspective. And there are different new procedures as well. And the responsibility of the state and its institutions is to go ahead and take these measures, and it's our responsibility to help the state. However, very frankly, I tell you, and with all responsibility, with complete responsibility, this first approach is not enough. This approach which I just mentioned is not enough. Nobody in Lebanon, no minister, no president, no commander of the army, no director general, no party, no movement, no organization can say that such precautionary measures which we take prevent the car bombs or prevent the suicide operations. They might limit them, yes. They might lessen them. They might, you know, limit the damage and the losses. However, to prevent them completely in the whole world, in the strongest countries of the world, security-wise, resorting only to precautionary measures is not enough and doesn't solve the problem. And so what is required to is to work on the second approach, which is more important than the first. If it's not equal to it in importance, it's even more important. Or if it's not more important, sorry, it's equal in importance. And the second approach is to work on uncovering these groups and isolating these groups and dismantling these groups and arresting these groups and eliminating these groups. This is the way they work in the world, and this is also standard procedure. People shouldn't wait and see to say we are waiting, we have checkpoints, we have taken measures, we are inspecting, when will the car bomb come to us, or when will the suicide bomber come to us. Security services which have responsibility must go and look for these suicide bombers, these groups preparing the car bombs and preparing explosives. Who are they, in order to arrest them and prevent the car bomb from being sent? Prevent the suicide bomber from coming in the whole world. This is how you combat terrorism. And so the second approach is also required. And this calls for efforts from all sides, very, very high efforts, strong efforts, security-wise, people-wise, politically-wise, and technically-wise. And so when we speak about the necessary cooperation, we also speak about the importance of not covering these groups and not protecting them politically or security wise and not defending these groups and not saying these groups are innocent and not dealing easily with them, not for our sake, not for the sake of Dahiya in southern Beirut, for the sake of Lebanon, because these groups want to drag Lebanon into destruction. They want to drag the Lebanese people into a civil war. And you must prevent Lebanon from being dragged into a civil war. And this is the way to do it. Also, in the same context, I'm not going to say first, second, and third. In the same context, also, we must put a stop to sectarian incitement. There is a political conflict between us. Leave it political. Let's speak politically. Let's attack one another politically, because the call for calm isn't working. People, you know, will stop being paid if there's a stop to this. And if they don't curse on TV, if they don't write articles with insults in newspapers, they're not paid. So, okay, get paid, get your salaries. course, politically wise, however, the issue of Sunni, Shia, and religious sects, leave this aside. Abstaining from sectarian incitement and also not only condemning the massacres when the massacre takes place. This is what is required, generally speaking, in confronting directly the enemy to achieve this goal. There is something which was required from the people. People also, I want to speak to the people now. I want to say a few words to the people, and then I'll say a few words to the killers. What I say to the people, especially those who were harmed yesterday and their families, those who were targeted yesterday and their families, and now all of these areas are under a threat. They are confronting a threat. We know your patience, and we know your courage, and we know your vision, and we know your nature. This is not my own feelings. This is something which we felt over tens of years. And the biggest test was in the July 2006 war, during these very same days. The reaction of these people at the end of the war and after the war ended, when they came back to their homes and found their possessions and their farms and their homes and their shops destroyed. And our experience together in the most difficult circumstances. They want to nail your determination. They want to nail your will. They want to nail your faith. They want to nail your commitment to this resistance. And we are all confident in your faith and your commitment and your patience and your readiness for sacrifice. And so this goal will fail. They won't achieve it. You always prevented this goal from being fulfilled, and you will do the same in the future. However, what is more dangerous, I am one of the colleagues in Hezbollah. I told my brothers that I am not afraid. I'm not afraid when it comes to the commitment of the people, or the patience of the people, or the will of the people, or their determination, or their holding on to the resistance. Because we all saw the people held on to this resistance after July 2006 more than they did at any time before. These people are as such, are of this nature. But what we are afraid of, my dear people, and this is one of the aims of the killers and those who stand behind the killers, what we are afraid of is that you be dragged into hasty reactions which are not calculated, which lead to sedition and lead to the sabotage of the country. This is something we must be aware of. Until now, the situation is okay. Until now, people are holding on to their pains and sorrows, and it's okay. And we must continue to hold on, to control ourselves. What do they want to say? Of course, I will list the names and allow me to speak frankly. When I say names, or Lebanese, Syrians, and Palestinians, they will be stated according to religious sect. Some people will say that the Sunnis are the ones who targeted you in Dahiya, and that the Sunnis are the ones who planted the bombs, and the Sunnis are the ones who sent car bombs to Dahiya, southern Beirut, and committed the massacre yesterday. Everyone who speaks in such a language is an Israeli and is a partner of the killer in achieving the goals of the killing and of the massacre. And I take responsibility for what I say. Those killers aren't Sunni. They have no religion whatsoever. They have no religious sect. They have no nation. They have no affiliation. They are not Syrian, nor are they Palestinian, nor are they Arab, nor are they Muslims, nor are they Sunni. They are killers. Killers. They have the thinking of killers. And they killed Sunnis. As I said in previous speeches, they killed Sunnis more than they killed Shia. They killed Sunnis more than they killed Christians. If you want, I can provide you with numbers and statistics. They killed religious clerics from the Sunni sect more than they killed from the Shia sect. And I have numbers to support what I'm saying. And so what I want, I call on our people in Lebanon, especially the Shia, despite the fact that yesterday in the explosion which took place, and at least according to the numbers we have, there is one Palestinian martyr, according to the first account numbers, and there is one wounded from the Sunnis. And this area in southern Beirut does include Sunni inhabitants. We have Sunni martyrs. We have Sunnis who were wounded. We have Palestinian martyrs. We have Syrians who were wounded in yesterday's explosion. So nobody can come and say that the Syrians did it, so we react against the Syrians in the country, refugees or displaced, their families and their children and their women. Or maybe this Palestinian person, some people are working, for example, are exerting efforts in order to create a conflict with the Palestinian refugee camps and the outskirts and push the Lebanese into confrontation with the Palestinians, or push Palestinians into confrontation with Lebanese. This Palestinian who committed such an act isn't concerned with Palestine. This Syrian who committed this act isn't concerned with Syria. The same goes for the Lebanese person who committed such an act. These people are a group of takfiris whose hearts and visions are blinded, and they are killers. And they have a project of destruction in the whole region, not just in Lebanon. Look at what is going on throughout the region. Those people don't have any other project. They don't have any other agenda or speech. The only thing they have is destruction, killing, killing, and killing. And I would like to assure you, our colleagues in Iraq, of course, our colleagues in Iraq speak when they want. The people in Iraq, our colleagues in Iraq, know the Western intelligence agencies and the Arab intelligence agencies and Israeli intelligence agencies who are controlling the killing groups in Iraq. And this will be also uncovered in Lebanon. So, please, here, let us not fall into the trap. Please. Here, let us not fall into the trap, because then the blood of our martyrs will be lost. Allah says, do not increase the situation, or do not make the situation worse. Sedition is worse than killing. Let us not resort to sedition. Let us not attack innocent people. Let us not hold innocent people responsibility for acts which they were not involved in, which they have nothing to do with. This is a very big responsibility which requires vigilance, wisdom. Nobody should drag us and drag you to such a place. And here, what I said between brackets, I want to say to the Jaafar family and the Amhas family. Now it has become clear who killed your sons in Baalbek or in Hirmel. This person was arrested, and he stated who were the other people. He uncovered the names of the others who were involved. And before that and after that, you must not hold people who have nothing to do with the killing responsible, and people who haven't been proven to be involved in this killing according to the investigation. And the highest level of responsibility and self-restraint must be exerted, because any irresponsible, illegitimate act from anyone, from the member of any family or any tribe in the northern Bekaa region, could lead to dangerous, bloody results. Today, I call on the people to show vigilance, patience, and I also send a clear message. Just as our message is clear, bombings and killings will not touch our will. And our message must also be clear that bombings and killings won't lead us to falling into the trap of sedition. However, of course, I once again say this is not the responsibility of us by ourselves. It's the responsibility of all of the people in Lebanon, because I repeat, and I don't like to lie to anyone, I repeat that if things continue in such a way, it could lead to severe repercussions. I say that, and to the killers I say, if you are working directly for the Israelis, okay, we know you and we shall know you. And there is a state which should arrest you and hold you accountable. And anyway, we will get you in the end. Our hands will reach you. If the state ignores you, we shall get you. We are not an alternative to the state, no, either in defending Lebanon or in anything else. However, in every phase or at any time where the state doesn't take its responsibility, I will say very clearly, we will take our responsibility. If you, the killers, and let me here be frank as well, if you allege or claim that you are defending, because you claim you're defending the Syrian people, do you want me to be any more clear? You say you might be punishing Hezbollah. This is an analysis. You might be saying that you're punishing Hezbollah for Hezbollah's intervention in Syria. Here I have 2 points. The first is that you, the Takfiri groups, you are the ones who cause the most sufferings amongst the Syrian people, not just against those who support the government, but even those against the Syrian government. You are the ones who cause most harm for the Syrian people. You, the Christian religious figures who support you, support the opposition, you're kidnapping them. You are the ones blowing up mosques. You are the ones killing children. You are sending car bombs to Syrian cities without taking account the casualties. Aren't you the ones doing this? You are the ones who claim that you are defending the Syrian people. You are the ones who cause the most clear killing and harm for the Syrian people. This is number one. Number two, when it comes to us, also, very frankly, we entered at one stage and entered specific areas to fight in Syria. And for the first time now, I will speak with extreme clarity. We fight in accordance with our values, in accordance with our discipline. We never harmed wounded. You harmed the wounded. We never killed a prisoner. And you make the prisoners stand on the walls and in front of cameras and execute them in broad daylight. We didn't kill civilians. We, in some of our battles, in order not to kill civilians, more resistance fighters were martyred because we abstained from civilian casualties. And what was said over the past few months on some Arab satellite media channels, what was said that we bombed and we killed and we committed massacres, all of this is a lie. Anyway, and let me hear, just give me 2 or 3 minutes more. In between brackets, and I know some of the colleagues will tell me, why do I name, but I want a name here. We have Al Jazeera and Arabiya, I will name them. These two channels came together on Syria, they came together on Iraq, they came together on Iran, and they came together on us in Lebanon. And in the Arab world, they accepted what Al Jazeera and Arabiya were saying. Now, after the divisions in Egypt, after the divisions which we are seeing in Tunisia, after the divisions which we are seeing in more than one Arab country, Al Jazeera is with one group, I'm not going to evaluate in the media, Al Jazeera is with one group and Al Arabiya is with the other. Open, look at these two channels, they speak against each other. They state completely contradictory information. Here they say 50 people killed, on the others they say 100. Here they say people were killed, on the other channel they say the other. Now, this division between Al Jazeera and Al Arabiya in the Arab public opinion, some people still listen to Al Jazeera and curse Al Arabiya, and some vice versa, listen to Al Arabiya and curse Al Jazeera. Why do you accept those who object to Al Jazeera in Egypt or object to Al Arabiya in Egypt? Why do you accept what they say in Syria, but don't accept what they say in Egypt. These media outlets, of course, we do have freedom of the press or the media. Unfortunately, over the past few years, the Arab media has reached a very low level, not of lying and distributing lies, but even fabricating lies. Fabricating lies. We, Hezbollah, when the Day of Judgment comes and we stand in the hands of God, all the witnesses will see, all the witnesses, the whole world will see that we didn't fight except the armed takfiri groups. That's it, point. Now we go back once again. Anyway, you, the takfiris, you're not defending the Syrian people. However, if you believe that by killing our women and by killing our children and by killing our innocent people and by your killing and by your destruction of our suburbs and our villages and our cities, if you believe that this could lead us to backing down or retrieving or backing down from a previous stance we have taken, you are mistaken. You stupid people, read, look at what has happened. Look at our experience for 30 years with Israel. You are mistaken. I tell you that our response to any such bombings, our reaction to any such bombings, very frankly I say, if we have 100 fighters in Syria, they're going to become 200. And if we have 1,000 fighters in Syria, they'll become 2,000. And if we have 5,000 fighters in Syria, they're going to become 10,000. You are mistaken. You are striking the wrong place. You are striking the wrong place. And if the battle requires, if the battle with these takfiri terrorists, if it requires from me and all of Hezbollah to go to Syria, then we'll go to Syria. We'll go to Syria just as we went for the sake of Syria and its people, for the sake of Lebanon and its people. I swear to God, for the sake of every Lebanese, for the sake of every Muslim and Christian who are hiding behind their own fingers, hiding behind the truth, for the sake of Palestine and Al-Quds, for the sake of the central cause. And so, nobody should assume that if they open a battle with us, they will have the upper hand. They will decide the battle. We shall decide the battle. We will have the final say. We, on the 25th of May 2000, we fired the last bullet. And in 1996, in the Grapes of Wrath, we fired the last bullet. And on the 14th of August 2006, we fired the last bullet. And as we achieve victory in all of our wars with Israel, if you want us to enter this battle with all our force, I tell the Lebanese and the Syrians and the Palestinians and all the people of the region, we also will achieve victory in this battle against the takfiri destructive terrorism, God willing. And I am sure of what I am saying. This battle will be costly, yes. However, it will be less costly than being slaughtered like sheep. Less costly than waiting for the killers and the murderers to come to our homes and to our houses. Of course, it's less costly. And we, in every battle, all of our battles are in defense of the dignity and honor and defense of the families and blood and existence. We are the men and women of this battle, and our children are big in this battle. And killings or blood won't deter us. We are those people who believe in the saying of the victory of blood against the sword. And assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Well, live there, a lengthy speech by Hezbollah's leader, Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah, a very informative speech about what occurred yesterday, which is that bombing in southern Beirut. This is live, of course, I should mention, from Aita al-Shab on the border with Israel, which is very significant since it marks the anniversary of the end of the 30-day war against Israel back in 2006. But let me just get right to